The Patriot counterpoints to propaganda.
Truth, liberty, and the real American way.
You have now enlisted in the Denton and Sasquatch Show.
The Denton and Sasquatch Show.
This is your beacon of truth in a world of liars, thieves, and whores. We are podcasting patriots taking the fight to the enemy, never taking freedom for granted because it cannot survive without protection. That is us, the Denton and Sasquatch Show. Our email, dentonandsasshow@gmail.com. We are calling on you to get involved, never back down, and never surrender the truth. Welcome to the DNS Show. I am Sasquatch, and he is Denton. I am. At least that's what they tell me. Is that a pretty good Denton? Should I just do the whole show as me and Denton? Probably not a good idea. Yeah, Denton is not here. He's dealing with some stuff tonight, so you're stuck with me. Oh, I know. It's horrible, but you'll get through it. I'll get through it. We'll all get through it. All right, let's start things off, and I'm going to start it by saying something you probably thought you would never hear me say. And that is, there is no deep state. There is no swamp. There is no deep state, and there is no swamp. No, they haven't gotten to me. I don't have a gun pointed to the back of my head right now. I'm not going to be Arkansided. But those terms are really more nicknames for what is really going on. We all like to think that we live in a constitutional republic, but you have to ask yourself, do we really? The answer is barely. At least it's not the type of constitutional republic that our forefathers, the founding fathers, wanted us to live in. Now, we do, however, live in what is called a bureaucratic oligarchy. And we've all been wondering what the Democrats mean when they say democracy. Donald Trump's going to destroy our democracy. Well, they mean bureaucratic oligarchy. In this thing I'm calling a bureaucratic oligarchy, now I didn't come up with this phrase, but it may be one that you haven't heard, but in this, there are bureaucrats deciding everything for us. I mean, everything. What we will drive, where we will live, what we're allowed to say, and what we're not allowed to say. They are also writing rules, regulations, and statutes. None of which are laws, but they are held to the same standard as laws. Meaning, you break or go against one of these, you can be fined, you can be hauled off to jail. But wait, Sass, I thought only Congress could make laws. Aha! Now you see what I'm talking about. Go ahead and drill a well on your land, and the EPA is going to take your butt in. Now, I know you're thinking, but didn't Congress create the EPA? No. President Richard Nixon proposed the establishment of the EPA on July 9th, 1970. It began operation on December 2nd, 1970, after Nixon signed an executive order. We've been hearing a lot about those, haven't we? Obama made it an art. Trump definitely wrote enough of his own. And then Biden just said, hold my Similac. But it began operation. And after Nixon signed the executive order, the order establishing the EPA was ratified by committee hearings in the House and Senate. Ratified by committee hearings. That's not how laws are established. So you see, we have been dealing with this for a lot longer than we realize. And it is crushing our freedoms and our rights. And if we don't stop it, we're going to lose them altogether. And just a little bit of a side note here. Most of the people working in our bureaucratic oligarchy are, wait for it, Marxists. Yep. In fact, think about the children.
I believe the children are our future. Teach them well and let them lead the way.
You know, those ones chanting death to the Jews and from the river to the sea. You've seen the protests going on at all the universities all over the country, and I'm pretty sure you see it and you think to yourself, this doesn't make any sense. What is going on here? This does not make any sense. That's because it's not supposed to. I posted something on X today, and it got more views than any post I have ever written. 61,000 views, actually. And then I got attacked. You're a fascist. You're a Nazi. You're a traitor. You don't even know what the definition of Marxism is, man. Well, here's what I posted. In Biden's America, we're witnessing the beginning of the neo-Marxist takeover via non-peaceful, pro-terrorist, useful idiots. Lies will abound. Use critical thinking. This is as serious as a heart attack. And like I said, I was then attacked. Now, in Marxism, there are the true Marxists who gain all the power and who don't like to live by the Marxist rules. And then there are the useful idiots who help the Marxists to gain that power and keep it. Those protesters at the universities, they are useful idiots. The protesters, not the protesters, the professors who are joining them, or AKA egging them on, they are the true Marxists. They are the ones who indoctrinated those little kids. Little kids are like in their 20s. But you know what I mean. Now, even though this has been going on for, I don't know, a few weeks, 5-6 weeks now, it's going to continue on for a while, I'm sure. January 6th, that was about, what, 5-6 hours maybe? Now, do you think any of these kids that are blocking Jewish students from entering buildings, or the ones occupying buildings, or destroying property, will get any of the punishment that the J6ers got? Nah. Tell you what's going to happen. They're going to graduate from their Ivy League schools, and they're going to get jobs immediately in the bureaucratic oligarchy. That's how it works. Self-perpetuating. So it would seem that Biden and Bernie Sanders have become buddy-buddy all of a sudden. Now, we all know that Bernie is a self-proclaimed democratic socialist? No. He's a Marxist. Now, you're probably thinking, well, do you think Joe Biden is a Marxist? No. He's a useful idiot. The people pulling his strings, they are the Marxists. So, let's learn a little bit about Bernie Sanders, shall we? This is from CNN. This is when he was running for president. A small collective community in northern Israel, modeled after the communist ideals of the Soviet Union, may hold the clues to the development of U.S. presidential candidate Bernie Sanders' political beliefs. Sanders is Jewish and a self-described democratic socialist. In the 1960s, he spent several months volunteering on an Israeli collective farm, or a kibbutz, that functioned according to communist principles. Now, you may have heard that word kibbutz before. That is where Hamas attacked a lot of the Israelis on October 7th. All of these people were living in kibbutzes. So let's go on. For years, Sanders has said he had been on a kibbutz, but has been vague about exactly where he stayed. The mystery was apparently solved last week when Israeli newspaper Haaretz, I'm not sure if I'm saying that right, dug up a 1990 interview with Sanders. In the article, Sanders claimed he spent several months in 1963 volunteering at Shar HaMakim. Again, don't know if I'm saying that right. Albert Eli, 79, has been a kibbutznik for almost 60 years. In 1963, at age 22, he worked in a fruit orchard and was in charge of the American and French volunteers. He distinctly remembers an American in the early 60s whose name stuck out. I heard the name Bernard. Bernard is a French name, Eli says. The only thing I remember is thinking, how can an American call himself Bernard? It's a French name. When he moved to the kibbutz, Eli admits he didn't know a thing about communism, but he studied the political philosophy of Marxism and Leninism, and the socialist ideology on which the former Soviet Union had been based. It was communism. Today it's socialism. Call it whatever you want, Eli says. It's a number of people who want to live together and want to share everything together. We think that you have to take care of the weak community members. The strong can deal with themselves. So Bernie, good old Bernie, lived on a kibbutz in the 60s. No big deal, right? But it just happened to be a Marxist kibbutz. Or, as the guy said, communism. It's the same thing. Socialism. It's all packaged the same way, just has a different bow on it. That's all. So I'm sure you're sitting there thinking, all right, so he was young. He was on a communist kibbutz in the 60s. Big deal. What does that say? What does that show? Nothing. All right. Well, let me read from this piece from the Heritage Foundation. Bernie Sanders and I have little in common, given his passionate commitment to democratic socialism and my firm belief in individual freedom. But we do share one thing. We both visited Moscow in 1988, albeit for different reasons. Sanders was on what he called a very strange honeymoon. That's right. Bernie Sanders got married and decided to take his honeymoon in what was then the Soviet Union. I was traveling in the Soviet Union with a delegation of Western journalists and opinion leaders. According to the Washington Post, Sanders, then 46, had a wonderful time combining business and pleasure as the socialist mayor of Burlington, Vermont. He met ordinary people from everyday walks of life, carefully selected by the Communist Party, you may be sure. He walked through Red Square and saw Lenin's tomb, visited Leningrad, now known as St. Petersburg, and took a boat ride down the Volga River. He traveled to Yaroslav, Burlington's sister city, where he toured factories, hospitals, and schools, all spruced up for the American visitors like a 20th century Potemkin village. Although visiting for only 10 days, Sanders found things that he liked, including the housing, which cost only 5% of Russians' incomes instead of 40% in the United States. He was obviously unable to visit, as I did, a cramped Moscow apartment of two small rooms occupied by a family of five. At one point, Sanders went out of his way at a banquet to roundly criticize the way the United States had intervened in other countries, but he made no mention of the countless Soviet interventions since World War II, including the erection of an Iron Curtain that sealed off 100 million people of Eastern and Central Europe, the crushing of the Hungarian Revolution of 1956, the Cuban Missile Crisis of 1962, the suppression of the Czech Rebellion in 1968, the banning of the Solidarity Trade Union in Poland in 1980, and the invasion of Afghanistan in 1979. While in Yaroslav, Sanders and his Vermont companions were treated to a visit in a sauna followed by so many toasts of vodka and Russian folk songs that a bare-chested, towel-clad Sanders was inspired to respond with the Woody Guthrie socialist classic, "This Land Is Your Land." That is not a sight I want to see. Bernie Sanders in just a towel. Just 584 miles to the southwest, Sanders could have visited Chernobyl, site of the world's worst nuclear disaster 3 years earlier, which turned that land into a no-man's land. Any nation can have a nuclear meltdown, but the Soviets, led by Mikhail Gorbachev, kept it a secret, allowing people to become sick and thousands to die. Back in Vermont, reported the Washington Post, Sanders held a news conference in which he eulogized Soviet housing and healthcare and openly criticized America. But he left out the systematic Soviet repression of courageous dissidents like Natan Sharansky, man, I'm bad with names tonight, who might still be in a gulag if President Ronald Reagan hadn't determined the end of the Cold War by winning it. The next year, Sanders visited Cuba. Anybody seeing a trend here? He seems to like to visit places that have communism. Sanders visited Cuba, and although he did not secure an interview with Fidel Castro, he returned with even greater praise of Cuba than the Soviet Union. While conceding that Cuba had enormous deficiencies in human rights, he declared that he never saw a hungry child or a homeless person, but he did see a revolution. That is far deeper and more profound than I understood it to be, said Sanders. Now, I'm sure, like me, you've probably never liked Bernie Sanders, but you weren't quite sure why. Now you know. This is what Sanders wants for America. This is what the Marxists want for America. This is why this upcoming election is the most important election of our lives. I hate saying that because I know it's been said for years about every election, but really, it's true this time. I don't know any other way to put it. I mean, seriously, the Marxists are out in the open now, which means they're ready to just take over. Speaking of Marxists, another name I'm probably going to screw up, Lavrenty Beria, the most ruthless and longest-serving secret police chief in Joseph Stalin's reign of terror in Russia and Eastern Europe, bragged that he could prove criminal conduct on anyone, even the innocent. "Show me the man and I'll show you the crime," was Beria's infamous boast. He served as deputy premier from 1941 until Stalin's death in 1953, supervising the expansion of the gulags and other secret detention facilities for political prisoners. He became part of the post-Stalin short-lived ruling Troika until he was executed for treason after Nikita Khrushchev's coup d'etat in 1953. Beria targeted the man first, then proceeded to find or fabricate a crime. Beria's modus operandi was to presume the man guilty and then fill in the blanks later. By contrast, under the United States Constitution, there's a presumption of innocence that emanates from the 5th, 6th, and 14th Amendments as set forth by Coffin v. U.S. 1895. Which brings me to President Trump, who is currently dealing with the non-disclosure case in New York, for which he will most likely be found guilty. Of course, he's going to end up winning it in appeal, but more on that later. So, besides being targeted by his political rivals, the neo-Marxist Democrats, remember, show me the man and I'll show you the crime, he is also dealing with the classified docs case. Now, there is no penalty for the Presidential Records Act, so they had to switch the crime to the Espionage Act. Now, I like to now and again remind everybody of this guy named Sandy Berger. And this is going to show the stark contrast of how both cases are being handled. Remember, Sandy Berger was never president and had no powers when it came to classified documents like President Trump does. This is from Wikipedia. Samuel Richard Sandy Berger was a Democratic attorney who served as the 18th U.S. National Security Advisor for U.S. President Bill Clinton from 1997 to 2001, after he had served as Deputy National Security Advisor for the Clinton administration, 93 to 97. In 2005, now listen up, in 2005, he was fined and sentenced to 2 years probation plus community service for the unauthorized removal of classified materials from the National Archives. President Trump was a president. He took stuff that may or may not been his, but that happens with every president. Now, this guy knowingly went to the National Archives and stole the stuff. He got disbarred, he agreed to being disbarred. On July 19, 2004, it was revealed that the United States Department of Justice was investigating Berger for unauthorized removal of classified documents. In October 2003, from a National Archives reading room prior to testifying before Congress on the 9/11 Commission, The documents were five classified copies of a single report commissioned from Richard Clark covering internal assessment of the Clinton administration's handling of the unsuccessful 2000 Millennium attack plots. An associate of Berger said Berger took one copy in September 2003 and four copies in October 2003, allegedly by stuffing the documents into his socks and pants. Berger subsequently lied to investigators when questioned about the removal of the documents. So this douche nozzle goes there knowingly stealing documents and shoving them down his pants. He gets 2 years probation and some community service and was fined a couple thousand dollars. President Trump, they want to throw in the gulag for 10 years. So yes, another word I hate using or phrase, but there is a two-tiered justice system. All right. You're going to hear about this a little bit later. This is from the AP. And this goes to show why President Trump is going to win on appeal. The headline says, here's why Harvey Weinstein's New York rape conviction was tossed and what happens next. Why was the conviction tossed? Now, if you didn't know, he was convicted of all those supposed rapes that he committed to all those actresses. You know the story. The guy was disgusting. But his conviction got tossed out. New York's Court of Appeals found the trial judge in the rape case prejudiced Weinstein with egregious improper rulings, including a decision to let women testify about allegations that Weinstein wasn't charged with. In its 4-3 decision, the court majority said it was an abuse of judicial discretion for Judge James Burke to allow testimony from these other women about loathsome acts and despicable behavior. Without question, this is appalling, shameful, repulsive conduct that could only diminish defendants' character before the jury. Does that sound familiar? Weinstein's attorney, Arthur Adelia, had argued that Burke also swayed the trial by giving prosecutors permission to confront Weinstein if he chose to testify about his past history. These judges are doing all the same things to Trump. They are trying everything to make him look guilty. So I'm pretty sure it's going to get overturned on appeal. If not, and it goes to the Supreme Court, it's getting overturned. Now, of course, if that happens, you're going to have all the useful idiots on X and on Facebook and on everywhere else, the news, saying, oh, these judges, they're pro-Trump. They want to help Trump. That's why they're doing this. No, they just know lawfare when they see it. Now, should we talk about, what's her name, Kristi Noem? Is that her name? Kristi Noem? Noem? Whatever. All right, so this is from the AP. In her soon-to-be-released book, No Going Back, The Truth on What's Wrong with Politics and How We Move America Forward, Noem writes that she took Cricket, and that was her hunting dog, with older dogs in hope of calming the dog down. Instead, Cricket chased the pheasants, attacked the family chickens during a stop on the way home, and then whipped around to bite her, she wrote. And I'm not going to read the whole thing, but I thought these two paragraphs were kind of telling. The response to the story was swift. Post a picture with your dog that doesn't involve shooting them and throwing them in a gravel pit. I'll start, Democratic Minnesota Governor Tim Walz posted on X. The post included a photo of him feeding ice cream off of a spoon to his Labrador mix named Scout. All right, let's stop right there. Now, we have a bunch of pussies in this country. A bunch of pussies in this country. And anybody that feeds ice cream to their dog off of a spoon is one of them. Now, I love my dog. I feed my dog. I have a strict rule where if they get a treat, it goes in their bowl. Everything they eat goes in their bowl. Nobody feeds them by hand because then they start begging. But that's just me. And maybe you feed your dog by hand, but do you give your dog ice cream off of a spoon? If you've done it before, I will give you a pass. But if you regularly do it, you're a pussy. All right. But South Dakota Democratic Senator Minority Leader Reynold Nesbitt considered the disclosure more calculated than stupid. He said the story has circulated for years among lawmakers that Noam killed a dog in a fit of anger and that there were witnesses. He speculated that it was coming out now because Noam is being vetted as a candidate for vice president. There you go. He said the quiet part out loud. That's the only reason that they're talking about this, is because they want to destroy her before she gets a chance to be VP, because she'd probably be a pretty damn good VP. Now let's just hope this, I don't know, is out there, it's said, it's done, and it goes away. And if Trump picks her, then all the better. Do you want to do some funny? We can do funny. Then I got mailbag. You know, ask and ye shall receive, and I got some emails. Let's see, what's the time? Yeah, we got plenty of time. Okay, so this story is about a Pennsylvania man. Let me find his name here. Roger Hanks, 76 years old. Oh, when I read this story, all I could think about was Denton. So, just to have some fun, I'm going to take out Roger Hanks' name and put Denton's name in here. And instead of Pennsylvania, he's going to be from Alabama. And if you've been listening to this show for any time and you kind of have an idea of Denton's personality, this might make you laugh too. If you're brand new, you'll think I'm a total dick. But here we go. An Alabama man who allegedly shot and killed his own wife and daughter told police he was the best of the best when it came to his abilities with a firearm, ABC6 reported. Denton was charged with two counts of first-degree murder and related offenses in the deaths of his wife and daughter in their Alabama home on Thursday. Denton told police that he got into an argument with his wife while cleaning his Smith & Wesson 2.0 9mm handgun, Fox 43 reported, and told her, "If you keep this up, this thing's going to go off on you." He then allegedly pointed his gun at her and told her that if she did not shut up and leave him alone, he was going to plug her, according to court documents reviewed by ABC6. His wife told him that he doesn't do anything and just sits around in his chair. Denton told police and was upset that he wasn't eating the food that she prepared for him. He claims that he pointed his gun at his wife's chest and it just went off, the documents show. When his wife fell down, Denton's daughter went into a rage and came at him. So he pointed the gun at her chest, and again, it just went off, he said, per the documents reviewed by the outlet. Denton added that he frequently shoots at competitions and is the best of the best when it comes to marksmanship. He told police he drank two German beers and an Irish whiskey earlier in the day. Denton's gun and two spent shell casings were found at the scene, the outlet reported. After shooting the pair, he reportedly called a friend and told them his wife went crazy and that he had to shoot her, prompting the call recipient to contact police, according to Fox 43. Now, I'm not saying that Denton would shoot his wife, and he doesn't have a daughter, so he wouldn't shoot her anyway. But I'm just saying that reminded me of Denton. Being yelled at by his wife saying, "All you ever do is sit in that chair and you never eat the food that I cook you." So, I don't know. I just thought I would have a little fun at Denton's expense, like I like to do. Okay, let's jump into the mailbag. First up, DNS, on some level, wouldn't it make sense for the White House press corps to simply not show up for work, knowing that Karine Jean-Claude Van Damme is just going to lie to them anyway? Just a thought, Rocky. Well, Rocky, thank you for calling her Karine Jean-Claude Van Damme. And, that's a great point. I don't know why they just don't show up. They should boycott her because she does nothing but lie to them. But yeah, great point. Moving on, Dented and Sass. Here is an email. I have to say I kind of like the format you're running. Opening salvo, current events, hot topic news, funny news, and outro. I personally would like to hear some snippets of survival tips or tech you two may know of, prepper news kind of stuff if possible. You have a good show going on, guys, especially when Dented is in the dungeon. Keep up the good work. Your authoritarian overlord, Scotty D. Well, thank you, Scotty D. We appreciate it. We do try to throw some prepper stuff in every once in a while, or just, but maybe we should do a little bit more of that. It is duly noted, my friend. We will try. And then the last one, I got yelled at a little bit. It says, I wasn't on the list of people you wanted to hear from. And the last time I sent an email, Sass said, I'm not reading all this crap. Never mind. Great show. Keep them coming. Now, that's from James. And in between that, James wrote a bunch of other stuff, but then he lined it out. So I'm not going to read that stuff. But I vaguely remember saying that. I don't know if I emailed that to him or if I said it on the show. But James, don't ever take what I say personally, because it's just, I don't know. I just say stuff to make myself laugh. But I do remember your email, and it was quite long. So if you guys could keep them sort of condensed, because, you know, we're busy men here. All right. It's about time to wrap it up, but I don't have all the details on this last story I wanted to do, but I'll just give you an overview, and maybe I can get to it the next time. Zelensky is working on a 10-year deal for Ukraine. Money from the U.S. to Ukraine for the next 10 years. He said, we're already working on a specific text, said Zelensky in his evening video address. Our goal is to make this agreement the strongest of all. We are discussing the specific foundations of our security and cooperation. We are also working on fixing specific levels of support for this year and the next 10 years. Look, I'm all for helping out the Ukrainians, but this is getting goddamn ridiculous. The next 10 years. Now, I read another article where it says that Biden is trying to get this deal done without Congress. If we enter into some kind of agreement with another country, it has to go through Congress, like a treaty. But he's trying to do the workaround, and they're also trying to fix it where if Trump gets back in office, he can't do anything about this. They're trying to put like a lock on it somehow. I don't know exactly the wording, but now the numbers I saw, if I remember correctly, is every 3 weeks, I think. No, every 3 months, we are adding $1 trillion to our debt every 3 months. So in a year, that's over $9 trillion. We are already $34 trillion in debt. This cannot go on. I mean, it just can't. There's no way. I don't care how much you love Ukraine or any of the countries that we give money to. We just don't have it. And if we keep going at this rate, our country is going to collapse. I know a lot of people say that and, you know, try to scare you with it or whatever, but it's true. Our country is going to collapse because we are out of money. And you think the Marxists are bad now, they'll really make a move then. But I don't know what to say. I don't know any other way to phrase this. It's not hyperbole. It's not a scare tactic. It's not the boogeyman. It is true. Our country is going to collapse if we don't stop doing this. We don't have the money. So, like we say in the beginning of the show, we're counting on you to get involved. You need to talk to people that are on the fence about this next election and tell them this stuff. Look it up. Find out the specifics of it and tell them how much money we spend every 3 months and how far in debt we already are and that we can't sustain it. We just can't. It's impossible. I hate to bum you out with that last little thing here on the show, but we're trying to get the word out here. We're doing God's work. Now, of course, these are crazy times. The Marxists are trying to take over the country. Just make sure you stay vigilant. Get involved, like I said, fight back. But also make sure you take the time to tell your loved ones how much you care about them and to enjoy this beautiful world that God gave us. Because, as you know, we are doomed, so drink up and have yourselves a good night.